Hello, I'm Greg Kotowich, and this is number 0137, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0137. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet actor Charlie Kuntz, who plays the recurring character of Fat Neil on NBC's Community. Did he feel intimidated when he first started working with his fellow castmates?
Sitting across the table from Chevy Chase is certainly a life-altering moment. When I went in for the table read, I was just completely awestruck and really nervous about whether or not I could even do it. But when I finally got there, I mean, the thing about comedy, and especially a niche comedy like this, is that it's really about protection and safety, and you have to protect each other in that kind of thing. So it only really works if they welcome the newer people, because they're, you know, being added to this dynamic that already exists, it can be kind of stressful. But everyone's really, really open and warm on that show. I mean, I've had such an amazing time working with everyone and from the very get-go.
Character actress Abby Miller, who has had a lot of roles, including a recurring one on FX's Justified. How does it feel to be a character actress where people often recognize you on the street, but they're not quite sure from where?
I kind of like that. The people that I admire and look up to, you know, have always been character actors. And it's funny, because when I stepped back and realized, no, this is actually the path that I want to be on, it didn't just open up. I mean, it opened up in terms of roles, but also I feel I was able to really see clearly. I would rather have that life than the one, you know, where you're constantly being recognized.
Stuart Nolman is back with a review and another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nolman. And on this edition of Book Banter, we have Deborah Feldman's courageous story of escape from a repressive way of life in her book, Unorthodox, as well as one landmark book about an ordeal towards personal freedom. That's coming up next on the Stuff File Program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0137, was Greg Kotowich, who is the Executive Promotion Coordinator for Air Checker Canada, Canada's number one radio source and one of the places you can hear this very program, the Stuff File Program, with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Thank you very much, Greg, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program. And the Stuff File Program can also be heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? You've probably never heard of Doug Ellison, much less a tiny little North Dakota town that he's the mayor of called Medora. Well, it's a population of just over 100, and Medora is little more than a small tourist town in the heart of the old Wild West. But Mr. Ellison is suddenly making headlines for himself and his town with his unusual plans to attract more tourists. He wants to stage mock public hangings. Yes. Actually, Ellison says, my vision is to stage a shooting where I gun down someone in the street, have a trial and a hanging, all within 20 minutes or so. He's even offered to be the first volunteer to wear the noose. He brought the idea up at a recent Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, and it was supposed to be voted on in April this month, but not on the agenda. He has since withdrawn the proposal. Initially, he said, the matter was not on the agenda, and they were a little taken aback. There was about 5 seconds of stunned silence at first when they thought I was simply joking. Well, as I said, he has changed his mind. I guess he really doesn't want to stick his neck out. And apparently, the fine art of proofreading is gone from this world, even when making royal souvenirs. In an effort to capitalize on the inevitable hype surrounding the first anniversary of Prince William and Princess Kate, the website for Guangdong Enterprises is offering a commemorative collectible mug made of fine English bone china. Now, one side of the mug features separate portraits of the royal couple, with the reverse side featuring the words, the body of a man, the beauty of a woman, may they produce children. Okay, sure, it's a little cheesy, but that's only the beginning of their problems. The mug's creators use the wrong brother's picture. That's right, they got Prince Harry on the darn mug. As of last week, the mugs were still being offered for sale on their website. Their website you can check out at GuangdongEnterprisesLimited.com. And yes, I have put a link into their site from my website, the Stuff File program, that you can take a look at it and see it for yourself, assuming it is still up there. Like I said, it was up there, well, last week. They're probably going to take it down sometime soon, or maybe not. Big oopsie on that one. Anyway, a 45-year-old woman was rescued from Lake Michigan after she fell in while texting on her phone and walking on a pier. Yeah, she took a long walk off a short pier. Bonnie Miller of Benton Harbor said she and her husband and 15-year-old son went for a walk when she lost her balance on the South Pier in St. Joseph. She was fully clothed and had trouble treading water due to the heavy current. A passerby, Rebecca Van Zandt, jumped into the water and was able to keep Miller afloat until rescue personnel arrived. A male clung onto a ladder on the side of the pier to try to assist the woman. St. Joseph police officers arrived on scene and saw the people in the water. Officer Chris Sisko threw a flotation device on a rope to the women. He was able to pull Miller back to the pier with the help of Van Zandt and the rope. I wonder if Bonnie kept texting throughout the entire rescue. Yeah. I almost made her the idiot of the day. It came kind of close, but I didn't. That comes later. Moving right along, an Austrian man apparently has the worst work ethic in the world. But he's also got a pair made of pure steel on him. Just hours before an appointment with the labor office to check on his health, the 56-year-old man held his leg against an electric saw in his home workshop and cut off his own foot just above the ankle. Yikes! Wait, there's more. Now bleeding profusely, the man then managed to put the foot in an oven. Why an oven, I don't know. Hobble out to his garage and call for an ambulance. An emergency operation was unable to reattach the foot. It seems he wanted to make sure he was labeled permanently unable to work. He may have gotten his wish. Yes, we don't want him back at work. And I don't think we want him near people, for that matter. He's just a little too creepy. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our first guest on the program. In Augusta, Maine, it looks like they've got a real-life McDonald's Hamburglar on their hands. Police say a young man ran between a car and a McDonald's takeout window in the exact second an employee was handing a bag of food to the car's driver. Our Hamburglar grabbed the bag and just kept running. A witness flagged down a police officer who spotted the hungry thief, ironically, in the parking lot of a rival fast food restaurant, diving into his McDonald's bag. But when our Hamburglar saw the police officer, he ran into the nearby woods and was never caught. Not to be seen again. Meanwhile, McDonald's replaced the stolen food worth about $20. Now, having been to a drive-thru myself once or twice, I kind of know how this thing works. And, you know, you've got to be pretty skinny as a thief because I don't usually leave that much room between the window and my car. I really don't know who does. I mean, and also, how does a guy get through there, just keep running, without simply getting clotheslined or clocked by the rearview mirror at the very least? That's what I want to know. Anyway. That's a story for another time, I guess. Let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, shall we? Actor Charlie Kuntz has played a recurring role on the hit NBC sitcom Community. The character he plays is Fat Neil. In his role on the show, he's been able to tackle an issue that's in the news a lot these days, bullying. Charlie joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Charlie.
Peter, hello, how are you?
Just hanging in there, Charlie, just hanging in there. You came to this role, I believe it was in the second season of Community?
I went in for just a one-line, one-off thing while they happened to be breaking the Dungeons & Dragons episode, and everything sort of fell into place, and they started putting it together for me.
So what was it in doing a role that was just one line, as you say, one episode, that they saw in you that it became a more recurring character?
I think it was more the strength of the the Dungeons and Dragons episode that actually put it totally through. But I was there, and I was, you know, having a good time and trying to do my best. I think they went through sort of the roster of their recurring characters and tried to mix and match who could be a good fit for this story, and they're not sure they found anybody that would be just fit, so I happened to be there, and they really took a huge chance on me. I don't know if they knew a lot about whether or not I could come through with it or do it, and they were really all really supportive and creative when we were doing it, and I think they molded something really fantastic.
Now, I mentioned in the introduction that the show did tackle the issue of bullying. Did you mm-hmm. Did you ever anticipate, or did producers and the writers ever anticipate that it would become a sort of lightning rod?
I don't know if anyone anticipated it going in. I know that when we were shooting it, there was definitely some moments where, on my end, it just started to become a little uncomfortable hearing all these barbs and going into this thing. But everybody wanted to play Neil from the get-go, really, not solemnly, but really with a problem, you know, and really a lot of heart and all that kind of thing. So the goal was to make this human character and this human story sort of anchoring this big, wacky world. And I think the main thrust of that episode is being welcomed in and how much welcoming somebody who's sort of an outsider can turn a life around.
As an actor, since you've become a recurring character on the show, you were also welcomed into the family on Community. Was that in any way, shape, or form intimidating for you, especially considering some of the talent that's already on the show?
Well, sitting across the table from Chevy Chase is certainly a life-altering moment. When I went in for the table read, I was just completely awestruck and really nervous about whether or not I could even do it. But when I finally got there, I mean, the thing about comedy, and especially a niche comedy like this, is that it's really about protection and safety, and you have to protect each other in that kind of thing. So it only really works if they welcome the newer people, because they're, you know, being added to this dynamic that already exists that can be kind of stressful. But everyone's really, really open and warm on that show. I mean, I've had such an amazing time working with everyone, and from the very get-go, everyone has been fantastic.
The show quite often is really out there with its concepts and stories, and it leads me to ask the question, how do you go about picking your roles? And I bring that up because I think back to one of your earlier roles in the film Rubber about a killer tire. How do you go about picking your roles?
Well, it's interesting. When I was in college, I was told that I would only ever play best friend roles, slacker, goof-off roles. And, you know, it's less a circumstance of choosing them. These are just the ones that fall into my lap. Rubber was the first job that I ever had in film and television. So I went in and I was, you know, wide-eyed and bushy-tailed, as I still am. And it just happened to take off. It just had some bizarre fit to this sort of little click comedy world, which is fantastic. You know, with Community, it's the same thing. I mean, I was such a huge fan of the show that it was hardly a choice. I was just so excited. And to have this character developed in the way that it was developed was just, you know, I'm coming out ahead on all fronts, which is fantastic and really lucky.
Is comedy where you like to be the most, or do you also prefer drama, or just acting as far as you're concerned? I know you have an upcoming episode of Awake, right?
Yeah. I try to think of it as acting. That sort of makes it easier to go in between the two. I think I have a natural predilection toward comedy is sort of where my natural mind goes, but drama is just a different muscle, you know. It's all wrapped up in the same body, but just kind of a different muscle. And Awake was really fantastic to get a chance to flex that, and also to get a chance to work with such a great dramatic actor in Jason Isaacs, who's so good in the Harry Potter movies. And there's another fantastic film he's in called Good. And you know, it's being a young actor. I mean, I want to be able to do everything, and I want to try everything and try a little taste of everything I can get my hands on. And at this point, every day I get to go to work is like being in a in a master class with these actors.
And your role in Awake is not exactly a sweetheart, right?
Not exactly. No, I'm suspected of possibly rape and or murder.
Yeah.
But I don't want to spoil it. I'm suspected, so we'll see how that shakes out.
We'll see how that.
But that was hard. And what's that?
Yeah, like you said, you'll see how that shakes out. But you say it was difficult to play that role?
It was extremely difficult. I mean, that's just something new to tap into. You know, every time you get a part, it's completely new, and it's, you know, especially with a career as young as mine, all these things are still fresh and new things for me to go into. So it was difficult, but again, the same with Community. I mean, the direction was so good, and the warmth of the actors were so present that, especially with a show that's got a subject matter like Awake, it's really, you need a safe environment to go to those places, and they really let me go to town on it.
Well, getting back to the surreal world of Community for a moment, what was it like working on the paintball episode?
I think that might be my favorite thing that I've done so far. It was so good, and that's the great thing about Community is that you can do all these different genres. I had an amazing time doing kind of the action western genre in that scene. I was all sweaty, and I get to run and jump, and that may or may not be the closest I ever get to an action star, but hopefully not. Hopefully I'll get another crack at it.
During the time you were filming that, you must have at some point said to yourself, I can't believe they're paying me for this.
No, yeah. Every single time. I can't believe I'm even on the phone talking to you. It's every opportunity that I get has been fantastic and is going to continue to be cooler and cooler and cooler. I'm just, you know, trying to take it all in. Happy to be here. Happy to be on the ride.
Is acting something you've always wanted to do since childhood?
It was something that I had done, I think, moderately well in, I think, school productions and things like that. But I didn't find it until college. I didn't find the real depth and substance of it that I love now in college. I changed my major from film production about 2 years in and found some incredible mentors that, you know, saw some sort of spark of life and were patient enough to coax it out of me. And that was when I really started to think that maybe this was something I could do. And, you know, if you get one shot at it, you may as well try to at least attempt figuring out how to make a living doing something that you really, really enjoy.
Was it always something that was encouraged by your family, or did they actually try to talk you out of it, or how did that play out?
No, my family's never tried to talk me out of it. They've always been very upfront about wanting to learn about it. Starting out, they didn't know much about it, so they didn't want to immediately say no, because I don't know really what is entailed in this profession, then no, you can't do it. But everybody really went into it with, I support you, I want you to do well, we're not quite sure how to guide you from here. And in that case, I had a lot of really loving support from my parents, but also found a lot of career guidance in mentors and things like that, which is great. And since then, they've become really in tune with it, and it's pretty amazing to hear them talk about ratings and guest stars and things like that now.
As you say, it's still a relatively young career for you. So where do you see yourself going? What are your ultimate goals? What would you like to do, or roles that you'd like to play?
You know, I'd like to do as many different things as I possibly can. I think there are just a lot of things that I haven't done yet, and I'm really, really interested in doing, you know, sort of heavier drama and even more comedy and things like that. I think it's just going to be navigating the kind of career that I'm going to be happy with. And, you know, obviously I'm a guy of considerable girth. So navigating around that as well, I mean, that is an important issue for me in playing characters that are heavy set in kind of a dignified way. That for me right now is sort of the guiding, guiding movement that I'd like my career to have going forward for right now.
Are we going to see more of Neil?
We are going to see more of Neil. Neil returns. He's going to be back next week. Actually, there was an episode that just aired about an hour ago, and it's the first part of the Pillow Fort episode. And part two happens next week, and I'll be there. And then another one later in April, rather.
Well, we look forward to seeing more of Neil, and look forward to seeing you also in Awake and the other things that you do. I thank you very much, Charlie, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thanks so much, Peter. I had a great time.
Actor Charlie Kuntz from the hit NBC sitcom Community. You can see Community Thursdays at 8 p.m. As the saying goes, check your local listings.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for now and forever, unless the Mayans were right.
And still to come on the program, you'll meet actress Abby Miller from the TV series Justified, plus Stuart Nauman with another edition of Book Banter, and of course an Idiot of the Day, plus lots more stuff on the Stuff File program, a show you can hear on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher, as you know, allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on any mobile device, from your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and beyond. It's on demand and on the go, and if you don't have Stitcher, download it for free today, Stitcher.com or in the app stores. And when you do that, by the way, you can also put in the promo code STUFFFILE, that's STUPHFILE, and you have a chance to win a $100 gift card. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right back to the stuff. Once again, we have another story dealing with the dangers of butt dialing. A man wearing his cell phone accidentally dialed 911 early one morning while allegedly stealing scrap metal from a Southington, Connecticut business. Now, according to police, the 911 dispatcher heard noises in the background and used GPS technology to pinpoint the caller's location. Because, according to Sergeant Lowell DePalma, maybe someone was in some type of medical distress. Officers arrived at the private business and found Michael Gorno, age 46, loading 700 pounds of scrap metal from a dumpster into a pickup truck. John Norton, owner of the business, said he was called to the scene moments after police arrived. The gentleman thought he was going to get away with something, and actually, he butt-dialed himself and put himself away, Norton said. Norton's company makes steel basement doors. There's often leftover scrap, and Norton said he sells it to help pay for his employees' benefits. The scrap metal is often targeted by thieves. Norton has since had the scrap hauled away, and he plans to come up with a new way of storing it. Gorno was charged with criminal trespass and larceny. Here's a case where this guy's ass literally got him in jail. Yeah. So what else would you use to defend yourself at a pirate bar than a swashbuckling sword? A security guard at Captain Steamer's Oyster Bar in Daytona Beach did just that, armed himself with a sword after hearing a strange noise around 5:20 in the morning. He suddenly found himself in a wild duel with a tire iron-wielding burglar. The night watchman, Anthony Brisbane, jabbed the perp, later identified as 29-year-old Trevor Pafal. He jabbed him in the stomach with the sword as he begged, "Don't kill me! Don't kill me!" While keeping the sword pressed at Pafal's gut, Brisbane dialed 911, but the suspect allegedly then cracked the security guard in the head repeatedly with a tire iron. In the ensuing scuffle, Brisbane threw Pafal on the floor and hit him upside the head with a full beer bottle. He then held a screwdriver to Pafal's neck and escorted him outside to await arriving cops. Pafal tried to convince police that Brisbane started the brawl by dragging him into the closed pub, but they didn't buy it. I hope in prison all the other inmates hear about his story so they can truly appreciate just how much of an idiot he was. Sheriff's detectives told the Everett, Washington Daily Herald in January that they had recently tracked down a 21-year-old man who confessed to stealing checks from the Money Tree store in Linwood, Washington, and forging signatures. Now, according to the detectives, the man was clear about his motive. "I don't have an addiction. I don't use or need drugs. I was doing this to show my parents that I could make it on my own without them." Yeah, his parents must now be so proud. A Cape Cod, Massachusetts urologist was offering a free pizza to men who are seeking vasectomies last month. Month, of course, was March. That is the month of March Madness. The Urology Associates of Cape Cod ran TV commercials offering a free pizza with a vasectomy. March Madness is also tied into the deal as a way of enticing men to undergo the procedure, which requires men to sit on the couch and rest for a few days. The ads feature an attractive woman playing with a basketball and a voiceover that says, "Hey guys, want to watch the college basketball tournament guilt-free?" Then the free pizza with a vasectomy offer is presented. "You know you've been thinking about a vasectomy anyway. Now's the time to get it done," the voiceover says. Urology Associates of Cape Cod Administrator Evan Cohen said March is the busiest time of year for vasectomies for his practice, with perhaps 45 to 60 being performed. He said he had hoped the pizza promotion, a free one-topping pizza from Surf's Up Pizza and Seafood in Sandwich, drums up extra business. "It does actually come with one topping. Maybe you can put some meatballs on it," he joked. Ha, 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 ha. This promotion wouldn't really work on me, but then again, I'm not a basketball fan. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest on the program, here is some advice from Memphis, Tennessee, Sergeant Karen Rudolph that might have saved a police officer accused of having sex in his squad car a bit of trouble. Anytime you communicate via a handheld or console microphone, you want to remain professional. That's what Rudolph said when asked about Officer Dion Anthony, who was accused of broadcasting his on-duty sexual encounter over his police radio. According to the station, not only could all on-duty officers hear what Anthony was allegedly doing, but so could anyone with a police scanner. Anthony has been suspended, and the audio recording has not been released. No word on whether the officer's handcuffs were used during the interrogation. Yeah. As I said, the audio recording was not released by the police, but I also mentioned that anyone with a scanner could also hear what was going on. So I'm willing to bet that recording is out there somewhere, and someone at some point will release it, maybe on YouTube. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Actress Abby Miller is a very busy character actress who has appeared in a slew of programs from Mad Men to Private Practice to The Nine to Veronica Mars, just to name a few. She is also known for the role of the world-weary prostitute Ellen May on the award-winning, the Emmy Award-winning FX series Justified. And Abby joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Abby.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, it's going great, Abby. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
You keep very, very busy doing a lot of projects, including writing, correct?
Yeah. Yes, I am. I'm a writer as well. I'm working on a script, and also I write music, so.
Where does your passion lie the most, or do you just want to do it all?
It definitely lies in acting. I've wanted to be an actress since I was very, very, and I've acted since I was very young. I started acting when I was 12 years old, in Nebraska, actually, which is where I'm from. But then, you know, you move to LA and things get, you know, you have your down times. And so in my downtime, I started writing music actually about 7 years ago I found a guitar playing friend, and we started writing and went on tour and played off and on for 5 years. And so I think it's really, my passion is definitely in acting, but I love, just when I have downtime, I always want to make sure I'm busy, you know, just staying active until I have my next role. So that's kind of where the writing came from, is just in the downtime.
Now, when I introduced you, I said character actress, and some people like that term, some people don't. Where do you come in on that?
I actually love that. It's funny because when I first moved here, I played a lot of ingenue parts and a lot of leading parts, and it took me a little bit of time to warm up to the idea of being a character actress. But it's funny enough, I was in a class maybe 3 or 4 years ago out in LA, and worked with my professor, or my teacher actually, not professor, was this guy Jeff Perry who founded Steppenwolf in Chicago, and he's a character actor, and he really just, I think, through just doing work with him, I was able to really embrace just like how much wider my net would be in terms of roles, how much wider of a net I could cast, I guess, in terms of roles if I were a character actress. And so I just really started to embrace it, and it's been, you know, off to the races since then. So I really love it. It's actually not a bad thing at all for me. I'm a big, big fan of being a character actor. So, yeah.
As you mentioned, character actors seem to keep busy all the time. They're always working, but they also get the moniker of "I know you." People snapping your fingers all the time, saying, "I know you from somewhere. Yeah. Did you teach my kids? Did I see you in the supermarket? Yeah. Where do I know you from?"
Yeah, totally. It's funny. I was always getting that, though. I feel like I look like everybody's cousin, or, you know, a friend from back home, or, you know, I have a very familiar face, and I guess I always have since I moved here, but I kind of like that. Like, I the people that I admire and look up to, you know, have always been character actors. And it's funny because when I stepped back and realized, no, this is actually the path that I want to be on, it didn't just open up. I mean, it opened up in terms of roles, but also I feel I was able to really see clearly, oh, well, actually, like, Frances McDormand is one of my favorite actresses. I've loved her. I watched Fargo years ago, and I think she's incredible. And I mean, Meryl Streep, obviously everybody mentions Meryl Streep, but I think that I do get that, and I always kind of have, but I would rather have that life than the one, you know, where you're constantly being recognized. Although LA is really good to you, you know, I find that a lot of my friends that I know that do work a lot, even if they are recognized, people in the business or people in the city just understand and leave, you know, don't bug you as much as they probably would if I were back home. But yeah, I do get it a lot. I've always kind of had the familiar face. So
do you find being a character actress that when you do get a role, you can almost dive into it, get lost in the character?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I actually, yes, definitely. And there, like I said, it opens up so many more doors, I think, when you're a character actor. I mean, because I'm a singer as well, and I have done music I've sang since I have acted. I was in the first thing I was ever in was The Sound of Music, so I was doing musicals really first. But I find that I love to find the voice of the character first. And so the voice could be, you know, it could have an accent. It could, you know, it just depends on where does the person, where do they live, you know, in your body. And that's kind of where I start building the character. But yeah, you're right. When it comes to characters and being a character actress, you can really build and go anywhere. And oftentimes I feel, specifically with Justified, they really give me a lot of room to play and discover. And, you know, I find that they are more open, and so therefore I can be more open and more flexible with what choices I decide to make with my characters, you know?
Well, I was just about to ask you about the character you play on Justified. As you mentioned, it's Ellen May, who is, as I described, as a world-weary prostitute.
Yeah.
When you first walk in and you get a role like this, what did you think about Ellen May, and what did you see differently than might have been on the page?
You know, it's interesting because I'm from a pretty small, from an incredibly small town actually, and so it was pretty easy to at first when I first went in for it, which the role has grown. It's grown a lot since I originally went in, and it's kind of easy to judge just to see, oh, she's addicted to Oxycontin and she's a prostitute. But it's, I think the real challenge or test is to really try your best not to judge her, because she's just struggling, and we all have our struggles. So I think that helped. And also, because I had never played a character like Ellen May before, I was able to take like bigger risks in the character than I probably would have had it been somebody that I was kind of used to playing. I didn't have anything to lose. And so I think I went in, going for it. And, I'd never actually done an accent before, and, it takes place in, you know, it's in Kentucky. So it's kind of, I got to work on that, and then also just like, where does she live in her voice, or where does she live in her body? And it was just really exciting because, like I said, I've never played anything like this before, and so I felt like there was just a lot of room for exploring, and as a result, and it was very freeing too for me. So I think that maybe helped, you know, in the room. And then obviously as we've gone along, the role has grown. You know, I was in a couple of episodes last season, and then more episodes this season. I think it's been just more and more room for play, and they've allowed that, you know, and building my character and my story, rather.
Got just a couple of minutes to go here, and I want to talk about one of the other roles that you're doing, and that is, you mentioned earlier that you're doing some writing. You co-wrote the film Congratulations, correct?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we had several titles, but we ended with Congratulations. Okay. Yes.
what's it like working on something that you co-wrote? Is it easier getting into a character when you get to put the words in the character's mouth?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, how we approached the writing was interesting. Both my writing partner and I, at the time. Well, we were both actors, and so we would improvise the scenes. That's how the first draft started with this the idea of, you know, just like the bare bones of the characters and the bare bones of the story. And then we would decide, okay, well, this is the breakup scene, and we would just kind of, you know, put out a little tape recorder and sit across from each other and improvise dialogue, you know. And so I really feel like by the time we started shooting, we had such a strong idea and strong connection to these characters. I've never experienced anything like working on your own stuff and being able to really, truly build a character from the ground up, you know, in every way, in writing and then, you know, see it all the way through. We just finished our sound design this last week, and it's finally finished, but you go on the ride with the character. But it was really nice because my writing partner, we were really able to explore together, you know. And then we brought on two other writers that are writers and directors, and they ended up directing the project, and they were able to kind of oversee the improv, you know, the games we were playing, and kind of guide us, which helped a lot too with the final draft of the script.
Had a chance to talk to many actors who have directed and many actors who write. Do you find that doing either or makes affects your acting or changes your acting in the future?
At this moment, I feel writing is, I love writing. I think that it's definitely my second passion, whether it's writing music or writing, you know, screenplays. But I don't know. I haven't thought about directing at all, really. So far, I just feel like I've just begun with the acting, you know. Like my journey's just begun as a character actress, and I'm just so excited to see what happens with that, that I haven't even begun to even think of the idea of directing. But at some point, maybe, you know, who knows? I'm kind of doing it all right now, so we'll see what happens next.
Well, as I said, you keep very busy, and people can also see you on the FX series Justified. I thank you very much, Abby, for taking the time to be on the show with us.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much, Peter. I really appreciate it.
Actress Abby Miller, who you can see on the FX series Justified. And once again, as the saying goes, to find Justified, check your local listings. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you heard about the trouble blooming in New Hampshire over a flower bed? A woman who planted flowers in front of her condominium was told by the condo association that she was violating their rules. But she refused to remove them, so the association is fining her $50 for every day the flowers stay in the ground. She hired a lawyer, and the association hired a lawyer, and that's when things got really expensive. Today, these neighbors talk only through their lawyers, and the association says the woman not only has to pull the flowers and pay the fine, but pay their legal bills too. Her bill now stands at $13,000. Let's be fair. I don't know how this case will end, but I can tell you right now who will lose. We all lose. We lose because this lawsuit is one more blow to civility in our society. We lose because lawsuits like this simply don't surprise us anymore. It doesn't have to be this way, though. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And the next sound you hear is indeed the voice of Stuart Nolman. Stuart?
Hi, Peter.
Hello, Stu. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm pretty good. Do you like the voice? Yeah, I mean, it's a good voice.
It's a great voice. Always good to hear it on Stuff File program.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's a good singing voice, but we won't get into that.
Although some people might say the voice is a little, I don't know, unorthodox.
Yes, but speaking of unorthodox, Peter, you like what you do. I mean, you enjoy your freedom, you know, do what you want to do.
Yes, I do.
Well, good, because let me tell you about Deborah Feldman. She's a young woman who's in her 20s, who lives in New York City with her young son, Benjamin, attends Sarah Lawrence College, very curious and rebellious in nature. And she's an avid reader, too. Her favorite authors are Jane Austen, Louise May Alcott, Richard Adams, and Lucy Bond Montgomery. Now, this is the type of life that Miss Feldman enjoys right now. Now, however, for most of her formative years, she couldn't enjoy those aspects of everyday life. She was a member of the Satmars, the most orthodox group of the ultra-orthodox Hasidic Jewish sect, which are based in the Williamsburg section of Brooklyn, New York. Now, for most of her young life, Miss Feldman lived a very strict and closed life where the Torah and ancient codes of Jewish law dictated how Hasidic men and women should conduct their lives, in which women were, at best, treated as second-class citizens. It's a restrictive world that many outside this ultra-religious circle are mainly unaware of. However, Miss Feldman's captivating memoir called Unorthodox lifts the curtain on the Satmars to the outside world, and what she has to say is quite an eye-opening reading experience. She was raised by her strict grandparents, and somehow, she possessed a sense of curiosity and rebellion at a very early age. And when she went to school in Williamsburg, she questioned the validity of what was being taught. they were basically encouraged not to pursue careers, just attend school until they were ready to get married. But she wanted to explore the world outside Williamsburg. One way she did it was she read novels, English language novels, by classic and contemporary writers, and she kept these well-thumbed paperbacks under the mattress of her bed. Now, Unorthodox gives a first-hand look, a very first-hand look, at the xenophobic world of the Satmars. Basically, we find out that the elders wanted their community to write and speak only in Hebrew and Yiddish because they thought that English was poison for the mind. And the only sources of outside information was their community newspapers, which were basically had outdated information. Now, the road to Ms. Feldman's defection from the Satmars began with her marriage to Eli, who was an ignorant, indifferent warehouse laborer who imposed even further restrictions on her life after the wedding. However, it was when Ms. Feldman began to enroll in poetry and writing classes at Sarah Lawrence College, and her encounters with people from the outside world accelerated that defection. Now, what makes Unorthodox such a compelling read is Ms. Feldman's intelligent prose. She does not carelessly blast the people and lifestyles that were part of her early Hasidic upbringing, as it were a gossipy tell-all memoir. Her descriptions are quite detailed and vivid, and she uses a great deal of intelligence and self-analysis to why the people who were part of her Hasidic world led their way of life in such a strict manner. Now, this book is very riveting. It's a riveting memoir of religious oppression and liberation as seen from the inside of one of the most mysterious branches of Judaism. We see the reasons and motives behind why they subscribe to such an enclosed way of life, which may be seen as right for the majority of the members of that sect, but was wrong for one person. What the audacity to question those motives.
You know, I saw her in an interview not too long ago on The View. Mm-hmm. And I was taken aback by just how articulate and intelligent she was and how she described the things she had seen and done and the life that she had led in a very short period of time, you know, the time of a typical interview on a show like that. And it was compelling to think, wow, how did she put up with that for so long when you hear her? And yet, as you say, it's clearly not a gossipy type of woman, clearly not somebody who has an axe to grind, just someone who wanted her own way of life.
Exactly. And the book is so well thought out. So even I guess some of the knowledge that she did learn at the school in Williamsburg, sort of she absorbed it and she applied it to a much more, I want to say, for lack of a better way of thinking.
And so the book is called?
It's called Unorthodox by Deborah Feldman. It's published by Simon & Schuster, and it's $27. And by the way, if you want another book I want to recommend very quickly, if you remember Ticket to Heaven, the movie in 1981, based on a great book called Moonwebs by Josh Fried, which gave people an inside look for the first time at what went on in the world of the Moonies, the Sun Young Moon cult, and how the author helped his friend escape from that cult. Fascinating book.
Excellent. So again, this one on this week's edition of the Stuff File Book Banter is Unorthodox.
Yes, by Deborah Feldman, published by Simon & Schuster, and it's $27.
And if people want to get in contact with you, find out more about what you do and where you do it, how can they do that?
Well, what they can do is they can read me in the West End Times in print or online at www.westendtimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
You're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this week's show, but we still have a few Stuff File news stories and, of course, an idiot of the day. You know, one of the first signs you might have a drinking problem is when you crash your car into a rehab facility. That's allegedly what happened in Eugene, Oregon, to Damien Bitar about 90 minutes after he turned 21. The legal drinking age. The crash happened at about 1:30 in the morning, and luckily limited damage mainly to the landscaping of the substance abuse center, Serenity Lane. Eugene police say Bitar tried to run away before they arrested him. Bitar was charged with DUI, reckless driving, and second-degree criminal mischief. His 1997 Chevy Malibu was impounded. Happy birthday. In Lincoln, Nebraska, the police there came up on a vehicle stuck in the mud. Police later said the driver, Sean Walker, another 21-year-old, was driving at about 50 miles an hour and didn't realize there was a roundabout at the intersection. He drove through the center of the roundabout, across the pavement, and into the mud. According to officers, Walker was in the driver's seat, but before the responding officer could get to the car, passenger Daniel Krupika, also 21, switched seats and told the officer that he had been driving. He then tried to pull the car out of the mud. Well, Daniel's blood alcohol content tested at 0.123, and Walker's was at 0.218. Walker was released after being cited for negligent driving and drunken driving, and Daniel was released after being cited for not wearing a seatbelt and, of course, drunken driving. Obliviates on sale today. One arrest, get one free. And Mayor Jim Preacher of the town of Norway, South Carolina, was pulled over by a state trooper in January for speeding. A preacher was unable to convince the trooper that his speeding was necessary in the performance of a mayoral duty, and their encounter apparently ended bitterly. As soon as the trooper drove off, the mayor turned on his own blue lights, chased the trooper down, and accused the trooper of speeding. Norway disbanded its police department last year, and a question remains whether the mayor has police powers. Clearly another case of where it seems to be that absolute power corrupts absolutely. In Dawson, Pennsylvania, 36-year-old Michael Sanner was worried his girlfriend was hiding another man in her house. So, putting to use his best investigative skills, he allegedly called in a false gas leak so he could watch from afar who exactly came out of the house. When police and firefighters showed up at the home, the woman told them that Sanner had threatened to report a gas leak when she refused to let him inside her residence. That's when police went to Sanner's residence, determined the reported leak was false, and arrested him. Jealousy can make a man do strange things, can't it? And while we're talking about gas leaks, sort of, it all started when someone at Jones County Junior College in Ellisville, Mississippi, found what they thought was a bomb threat in the bathroom. They gave the toilet paper note to a teacher who recognized the handwriting. Investigators eventually arrested Harold Hadley Jr., age 19, for writing the note which said, "I passed a bomb in the library." Hadley, a straight-A student scheduled to graduate in May, insists he meant something different when he used the word bomb. His aunt agrees. "I'm going to just let modesty go and tell you that we are from the country, and so he calls passing gas bombs," she said. And the teacher recognized his handwriting, and it was all blown out of proportion. Yeah, in more ways than one. And that leads us to the end of the program, which means, you know what? The idiot of the day!
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff I'll present, the idiot of the day.
Victoria Colon, age 28, filed a workers' compensation claim for injuries sustained while working at a North Bergen, New Jersey Target store. Or should I say, Target. She claimed that a box she was carrying hit the edge of a shelf and then boxes fell off the shelves and struck her in the head, neck, and back. But when managers checked security camera videos, yes, there's video, they saw something very different. According to prosecutors, the video showed Cologne loosening a shelf in the storeroom so the boxes on it would fall when she bumped into it. She then positioned herself under the boxes before pulling a shopping cart containing additional items onto herself. Then she picked up a package and hit herself in the head with it several times. Yes, and it's all in video. Hudson County Assistant Prosecutor Mike Zevitz said that, if convicted, Cologne could face up to 10 years in prison. "If you are considering a crime," he said, "you have to remember eyes are on you when you least expect it." Wasn't that the tagline, basically, for Alan Funt? Smile. You're on Candid Camera. Yes. How can someone who works in a major department store where you'd expect they have security cameras plot such an elaborate scheme which includes repeatedly hitting themselves in the head and think they could get away with it? One reason, and one reason only. They're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0137. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's number 0137. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.